Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
As you know, we have been following this Malkalafa case very, very closely. It made us angry. It makes us frustrated. It is in many ways a symbol of so many bad things, unfortunately, in our community, but also wider than our community. It's not just the Jewish community, unfortunately, that has allowed this and created fertile ground for sexual abuse to take place. It's many, many communities. Somebody who suffered from that very, very greatly and who continued to suffer, actually, even as he spoke about it, as he dealt with it, wrote a book which I would encourage you to read. It is a very real and honest book, Who Gave You Permission? It's a memoir of child sexual abuse. Is Manny Wax. He joins us this morning. Manny, thanks for taking the time to speak to us. Good morning. How are you?
Good afternoon from Australia.
Well, good afternoon from Australia. So, Manny is the CEO of, do we pronounce it Voice SA? The Voice Against
exactly.
Sexual
Voice
Abuse.
Voice SA. Right. That's right. Voice Against Child Sexual Abuse, CSA, standing for those. Yes.
So watching the Malkalafa trial must be, in a way, quite traumatic for you, but in a way, I can't use the word rewarding, but maybe vindicates because this type of thing that you're fighting for is finally seeing the light. Give me your sense of watching this play out.
Absolutely, Howard. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this very important issue, something that, as you rightly pointed out, is not unique to a particular community. It's around all segments of society. And in response to your questions, you've hit the nail on the head in terms of both the positive elements and the negative elements that results in following such a case, in particular for someone who is an abuse survivor themselves. On the one hand, it has been one big trigger for myself and many others who have reached out to me as well, listening day in, day out to court procedures. You hear of the 27, it's come down now to 27 charges, including 11 of rape and the rest being a range of other charges such as indecent assault. And then when you hear the descriptions, it really is, it beggars belief that someone could do that.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you've also got the empowering and vindication elements, in that you can see the progress in the Jewish community. You can see the fact that, survivors or complainants, the alleged victims come out and go to the police. We see institutions better equipped to deal with this issue. So there has been a lot of progress and you see the positive elements as well. And that's important.
Yeah, because in fact, when you started to go public with us, it was a very different world. It's obviously a pre-#MeToo world. And I don't know if that was a significant point. I don't know if that was a turning point, but the world in which you emerged from is a very different world to today, isn't it?
Absolutely. In 2011, I was the vice president of the Australian Jewish Community peak body, the Executive Council of Australian Jewry. And at that time, I realized that I needed to utilize this opportunity as a leader, senior leader in the Jewish community. If I wasn't going to talk about this issue as someone who experienced it themselves, endured child sexual abuse by two perpetrators, can't speak about this publicly, that it would be very difficult to imagine anyone else doing so. So at that time when I did speak out, ultimately did set a few things in motion, in particular, including the Malkalafa case, because in 2011, after I spoke out, that's when one of the three complainants went to the police and gave a police statement, and then subsequently the others also followed suit. So, you know, the community's response to my public exposure versus the more recent cases, you can see there are differences in the way the community responds as well. So we're a lot more comfortable in talking about this issue. Back then, if I used to even utter the words child sexual abuse, people would recoil. They wouldn't know what to do with themselves. Now it's on everyone's lips in terms of understanding the need to educate our children, our parents, our community, our teachers, and to really have open conversation about it, because ignoring it clearly not only hasn't helped, but it's counterproductive. It actually helps the perpetrators themselves and the institutions that cover these allegations, these cases up.
Something that I've always wondered is, in a case like yours, where you had to fight very, very hard for recognition, exposure to justice in all of this, in this way, there's little doubt that this experience that you endured became part of who you are and your identity. Does sexual abuse always result in that, or and I'm making a few assumptions here, obviously, and you can correct any of them if I'm incorrect. Does it always result in a person that becoming part of their identity and who they are, or did the fact that you fought this battle for people mean that, whereas it might have become who you are, your lifelong work, that others don't need to live with that as part of who they are?
I think that's an excellent question, but in response, what I do and the impact on me and the work that I do is very different to the average victim survivor. Not everyone becomes a public advocate. I would definitely, and I agree with your latter description. So essentially, I've made a decision to do what I've done, and therefore yes. I do. It is a strong part of my identity. And just to let you know, after 12 years of doing this, at the end of my Khalifa case, I will be stepping down from my public advocacy role in this area and from Voice CSA. The price is too much, and I do feel like I need to move on.
I would imagine
that's
some
a
point.
Separate matter. But in terms of the other question around the identity on other victims and survivors, for me, it really, in my experience in talking to and assisting many others, it is very much similar to others in broader society who endure any other form of trauma. Often it is a part of their identity. It affects in one way or another some of what their lifestyle, their thinking, etc. Of course, in the context of child sexual abuse, there are differences because many of the survivors end up being diagnosed with PTSD or even complex PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, anxiety, and therefore are prone to a range of other debilitating situations, medical conditions and the like. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it defines who you are. It is a part of who you are, but just like as I was saying before, we all experience different forms of trauma. Someone may have been in a car accident. Someone may have seen a loved one pass away at a young age. So we all have these challenges in life. What we do with them. And it's about the personal resilience. It's about the support networks we have. There are so many factors in play when any of us tries to heal and recover from the difficulties and challenges in life, in particular from traumatic experiences.
Absolutely. And a final question. One of the things that bothered me tremendously through this Mulcahy case is, and especially talking about it publicly, reporting it, speaking about it in media, is we always have to say alleged and we always have to say innocent until proven guilty. And of course, that's correct. Absolutely correct. But when we have a case where the person has spent so long fighting the ability to even have a court case and to try it and to air it in front of a court of law, when does that become a little bit too much to keep at that?
I completely understand your question, and it's such a difficult issue that over the years I've struggled with, and I still do today. If I personally believe a survivor or a victim of abuse when they approach me, how can I then go on to refer to their alleged perpetrator as an alleged? Exactly. So it is a very difficult situation, but there are also defamation laws, and there is the important point of justice. We live in a democracy. We do live in a society where there is the presumption of innocence. And during this trial, I certainly became a lot more learned in the context of judicial process and the like. We have an accusatory process in Australia, which essentially means that the onus is on the prosecution to demonstrate the facts and evidence that the person is guilty. And I think we need to be very careful to ensure that justice is done. We obviously all have our emotional feelings, but we do need to make sure that there is people get fair trial and need to put everything else aside. And hopefully in this case, we're going to see justice prevail after many, many years. But we have seen the three courageous complainants there referred to at this stage get their day in court, which is all they really wanted initially. And hopefully with the jury about to go out into deliberations supposed to happen from tomorrow at some stage, we hope and expect. And hopefully in a few days we'll hear back to, you know, verdicts. There are 27 Absolutely. Charges. They all need to find them individually guilty beyond reasonable doubt, and it needs to be done by consensus of 12 out of 12. So it's not an easy, it's a very high benchmark they need to achieve, but hopefully we will see justice prevail.
Manny Wax, he's CEO of Voice SA, the voice against child sexual abuse, talking to us about the Malkalafa case and child sexual abuse in general. Manny, thanks for taking the time to chat to us.